It's Wednesday, June 5th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 301 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
Well,
what'd you do with Dan? What did you, Pat Roper, do with Dan?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've always been the moderating host.
You just saying I haven't been paying attention. You know, or I don't remember. You're saying my memory's that bad?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it actually kind of is, but yeah. Seriously.
You probably need to eat better foods that will help your memory.
I've known Dan for 36 years.
I don't even know who you're talking about. Who is this Dan that we're speaking of?
You son of a bitch.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, yes. Guess what I had for lunch today, Pat?
Was it Dan?
No. That's what Pat had for lunch.
Dan's too skinny anyway.
That's true.
Not very filling.
He's hardly a meal.
Yes.
So, one of the guys at work has become obsessed with food trucks. We all know how much Chad really loves his food trucks. Mm-hmm. So Chad has given a couple of websites out, and he's been watching these websites to see where all the trucks are. So I was looking on this map, and there was a food truck pretty close to me. It was it's a truck called Curbside Cookery. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking through the menu, and they have some really interesting sounding things. And one of them listed was a taco salad in a bag. I love he has this. The face for podcasting right
yes,
now.
Yes.
This, what the hell is that face? And that was my reaction when I read it. So I was like, okay, I got to go try this place. So I go over there and I'm looking on the menu and they have some like burritos and they have burritos
now,
with Fritos in them.
I got to stop you there real quick. For people who don't know, St. Louis has a certain food truck culture. Like, it isn't crappy cheesesteaks and bad hot dogs and crappy tacos with mystery meat in them.
There are a fleet of trucks that are all different.
Yes, they're all different. They're all owned by different people, and they're all foodie trucks. They're all high quality. We've got Korean food trucks. We've got sushi food trucks. We've got artisanal pizza food trucks.
Some of the better Italian restaurants in the area. There's an area we call The Hill that has a lot of Italian restaurants. Mm-hmm. There are multiple food trucks that are based out of The Hill.
Yeah. A crappy food truck would not survive in St. Louis because you can get super high quality gourmet food for $10 a meal, less than sometimes, $7 to $10 a meal.
Now, what I was getting was not super high quality gourmet food. So
but it was taco salad in a bag.
But it was different. It was
so I went over there. I'm looking at the menu, and they've got sandwiches. They've got burritos. They've got burritos with Fritos in it, which like my wife loves that.
Is that a burrito? Or a frabito.
I like frabito.
Frabito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
So I order a chicken burrito, and then I order the chicken taco salad in a bag. Because like, I have to know what this
is. Yeah, I'm right there with you, Wayne. My curiosity
out to be, they take a bag of Fritos, a personal size bag. They open it up. The Fritos are in the bottom. Then they pile the meat in. Then they pile the lettuce in and all of the other ingredients.
I've seen something like that before, except I think they did it with like, it may have been the taco salad, but I've seen that. Yes. Okay.
The meat was really good. So the meal was incredible, but it's like such a simple, novel idea of this is a Fritos bag that they've put meat in.
That they did the same thing with like, it was like a chili Frito. There's a name for that. Basically, when you put corn chips in chili, and some of the stuff, it's
chili Frito pie.
Yes, the Frito pie. That's what it was. One of the places their Frito pie was literally, they opened up the bag of Fritos and they made it in the bag.
Yeah, that was I thought that was a really cool concept.
How did it eat?
So what I did was I ate down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I pulled the top closed and shook it up real good to mix it up.
Uh-huh.
And it was delicious. I was shocked by how good it was. But there was one thing on the menu I wasn't willing to try. And it turns out I know someone who's had this and he didn't care for it at all. It was macaroni and cheese in a waffle cone with bacon on top.
Oh, I'd try that in a heartbeat. That sounds good.
I would try it, yeah.
If it's good mac and cheese, you know who makes the best goddamn mac and cheese?
Panera
Bread, yeah. Which is to, well, it is Panera Bread now, but it's
St. Louis Bread Company.
Yeah. Which I won't go into my whole soapboxing of why we had to change our name because
well, we don't change
why
it in
they
St.
had
Louis.
To change the name yeah. of the company just because in other cities they don't like, you know, St. Louis. To hell with them. You know, you've got franchises. It's the name of the company. Screw yeah. you if you don't like it in Philadelphia or wherever the hell you're from.
Unless you listen
that's
to
that's right.
Us.
That, yeah, stand up, hometown pride.
Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, they make their and it's and it better be good for the goddamn price you're paying for it. Yeah. Okay?
Noodles and cheese. Oh,
yes,
that's it.
My God, and it's the white cheddar shells and cheese mm-hmm. is what they use, and it's excellent. And of course, my 2 year old, it's his favorite fucking thing to eat. But my little Epicurean who likes to eat the most expensive shit on the menu, mm-hmm. he loves it. And it's good. But yeah, so like that, I would like that in the waffle cone with the bacon. That would be very good.
There's another food truck. It's one of my favorites. It's called Completely Sauced, and it's a Cajun food truck.
Mm-hmm.
Best Cajun food in town. If there's a St. Yeah. Louisan who knows of a better Cajun restaurant in St. Louis, chad@feartheboot.com. I want to hear about because I love yeah. Cajun food.
Pat,
but
if you want to try it, Pat, we're all talking about Friday. And we may end up talking about this on the mic afterwards. There is a food truck rally that a bunch of us are going to.
I posted in that thread today. Yep. I said, I want to go. I'm going to talk to Beth and see if we can go because I think what we might be able to do is just, like I said, yeah, pick up the kids and go straight from there because it starts at 5,
yeah.
which is mm-hmm. great because I want to get there like at 5, eat, and then we'll probably end up going home before it's 5 to 7, I think, right?
5 to 8.
Or 5 to 8. We may end up going home yeah. by about 7 o'clock because, you know, the kids, well, mm-hmm. Connor, my 2-year-old, his bedtime is supposed yeah. to be 7:30.
Bring your dogs, Wayne. Kids will love them.
So, I've taken my dogs. Where this is a local sculpture park. I'm always mispronouncing this.
Lohmeyer
Sculpture Park that is really close to me.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be going over there hitting the, there are 14 mm-hmm. trucks there, but they have a trail back in the woods that I like yeah. to take the dogs on. You can take the kids around to see the sculptures. But that's assuming anyone shows up, because I have a feeling Chad's going to be a douchebag mm. and not let anyone show up at the sculpture park.
My, I wonder why you would get that impression.
Here's
but no,
word.
I'm actually...
Gaming
I am,
story time.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Friday, because I have not done the food truck experience yet. And the problem is that there's 14 food trucks, and
completely sauced.
I can only eat so much.
Yeah.
I eat too much as it is, but I can't even, you know.
I'm handpicking the trucks that I go to on Friday based around which ones never come near me at work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, some of them I know are really good,
hey, you
but
guys
I
are
won't
lucky.
Touch them.
You guys are lucky. They actually come near your work. You know, I'm in a part of the city where they don't come. Right. And even if they did, it's too much of a hassle to get out mm-hmm. and get to them. So yeah, I envy you guys in the fact that you have access to the food truck. So I am quite excited about Friday.
Completely Sauced has fried jambalaya balls.
That so could be very good. That sounds very good.
Yes. But anyway, you had made mention of me shutting down Lohmeyer Sculpture Park. And yes. I gave fair warning. This is a gaming story. So,
yeah, it just so happens that the food truck rally ties in to the game session we had on Sunday. And it is purely coincidence, too.
Yes.
I'll set this up. It was we actually had a week off of gaming before this last session. We had we did gaming, but we didn't do our regular, you know, Dresden game.
We did our Inspector's game instead.
Yes. Yep. That is set in our Dresden city that we made. That's a sort of a comedy version of what we do with different characters.
So where we had ended 2 weeks prior to this last session was that the party was going to face off against one of the bad guys in the sculpture park.
Mm.
It was going to be this big showdown between the two characters. And so first I do a week's worth of getting ready, and here's everything all planned. I'm all set. I know what my bad guys are going to be doing.
On the character side, Beth basically wrote out a couple yeah. of emails
yeah.
where she detailed yep. out all kinds of preparations that we would be making in yeah. the park for this yeah. encounter.
And
solicited the help of the rest of yep. us,
and
which
Dawn,
I had nothing to add.
One of the things with how
Dawn made a hand-drawn yep. map of the area. Yep.
One of the things with how I ended it was Dawn's character has a coven of witches, and
she's a witch.
She's not wicked. She's wicked.
Yes.
You know, they had time ahead of time to set up things in the park. Mm-hmm. And I told her, okay, I'm going to let you give me five aspects that we're going to give this park. You have had time to prep this before they showed up. So they did, you know, they left knowing when I come back, I need to have some ideas for this. So not only was I coming up with, here's everything that my bad guys are going to do, the other players are coming up with, here's everything we're going to do.
Yeah,
there's everything was building up to the big showdown.
2 weeks worth of work.
There was a lot of planning that went into the
planning. Lots of planning.
By everyone.
And then...
except me.
Chad.
During the planning stuff, I was keeping my mouth shut.
I actually didn't participate in the planning wise either, but that's mainly because my character in this is not...
You're an observer.
I'm more of an observer in this. So it's like I'm absolutely a team player in there to help.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as...
I read all of the planning, and I'm reading through it. It's like, okay, I can't comment on any of this because I'm running the game, and I know what's really going on. Mm-hmm. But as I'm reading through it, it's like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait to see how that plays out. They are totally off base on this. And I'm just going through the line about what everyone was thinking, what they had right, what they didn't have right. And I was getting this huge kick out of just the conversations leading into it.
So here's the setup from my perspective and my character's perspective. Playing Dresden Files, modern day fantasy, all that sort of stuff. I'm playing a creature from the Fae, a fairy. That's our word. You can't use it. And I'm playing this fairy that... is a coyote, and he's a trickster spirit in the tradition of like a Japanese fox trickster spirit or a tanuki or a Native American coyote trickster spirit, that sort of thing. And his whole thing is he lies. He weaves these web of lies, and he got punished for it, severely punished for it, and exiled from the Fae and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, that's his whole thing, is that he's not a combat character. He's not a combat powerhouse. In fact, I even wrote into the character that he's a coward. And he runs away. It's like the team will run into the dragon's lair to slay the dragon, and he won't run in. But he will sneak in the back and tie the dragon's tail to a stalactite. That's how he operates. So all this stuff is going on, and there's the big bad. And not to bore anybody with the minutia of it, but the team, who is led by Beth, who is playing in essentially a paladin. She's a knight of the cross. She's a holy person who has a holy sword of kickassery. And she... she's kind of leading this charge, and she becomes, her character becomes very focused on another character who is the big bad in this instance, because this big bad hurt a friend of hers.
Yep. And that big bad actually was just as focused on her character.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys didn't necessarily know it at that time. Yeah. You found that out later. The big bad was very myopic and looking only at her, but you guys didn't know that.
And so Beth, who's leading the team, is laser focused on this one character. My character is a deceiver. He's a trickster, and he spins webs of lies. And so I'm looking at the situation, how my character would look at it, of there's more going on here, and we are just worried about embarrassing and kicking the ass of one person who isn't even in charge. Someone's pulling her strings and manipulating us, and it's like, and I started trying to take it apart. I don't know how close I got or to the truth, but, you know, basically, I think we were being manipulated into attacking this person. Don't tell me if I'm right or wrong. We're not done with the game yet, so... For the past couple of weeks during this, my character has been dropping hints of we shouldn't meet the big bad in the park for the final showdown. It's a trap. Oh, well, we know it's a trap. We're going to spring it and kick their ass. And it's like, yes, it's very brave, and I understand it. I understand the storytelling trope of it, too. But my character's like, no, we are playing. It's beyond we are going into a trap and going to get killed. We are playing into someone's plan here. We are playing their game by their script, and we have a problem, and we need to not do this. And going to the game that day, I know I hadn't really said anything about planning because I didn't want to do it, not for any mechanic. Oh, I don't like big combats or anything like that. No, for like the storytelling aspect of it, of we are getting played. And so I'm thinking of like, we are going to get played. We shouldn't do this. My character is thinking big picture and trying to see, it's like, okay, we are walking right into the spider's web here that we didn't weave. We need to be weaving our own spider's web. So I'm driving to the game and I'm thinking, I have to do it. I have to convince Beth not to go into the park and have the big showdown. We have been planning this for weeks. People have drawn hand-drawn maps. People have come up with intricate detailed plans of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, and have been emailing each other back and forth. Wayne has been putting a lot of work into it. This is going to be one of those set piece epic battles that is going to define the nature of this game.
Oh, and it would have.
And I am going to make it not happen. I'm not going to put my foot down and say, no, you can't do it. I'm not allowing it. I need to convince another person who is the leader to walk away from this. Of her own accord, I need to convince her to walk away from it because I can't make her. And it's like, I am just going to shit on everybody's parade. And it's like a 20, 30 minute drive to Pat's house where we play. And I'm like, should I do this? Should I just eat it and swallow what I know and what I want to do and what would be in character for my character and just kind of go along with it for the moment? Or do I be an asshole about it? And I'm like, what's going to be the outcome of it? Everybody going to hate me because I shit all over this? So I'm like, no, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's right or wrong. And it's a game. So the point of a role-playing game is no matter what you do, play it in character.
Was any of that on the drive there? Did the thought of GM trust ever come in? So did you have the thought of, if I do this, will Wayne be able to recover from this? Did that thought ever cross your mind of, how will he handle this?
No, but the thought crossed my mind of, what would I have done if I were the GM? How bad would this screw me over if I were the one running this game? And I thought to myself, I could probably recover, but it would probably be a shorter game, and I would have to maybe say, okay, wait a minute, guys, I need a few minutes to kind of process this. And you didn't. You didn't need that, so it was awesome.
It wasn't a shorter game. I didn't need any extra time to process.
So what I did is, and I was still had my doubts when I sat at the table, and everybody, we had, like you have in these situations, the characters, the players were sort of having an out-of-character war council. And it was kind of that edge between in character and out of character. And Beth, not Beth's character, Beth asked me, Chad, okay, you're the plan guy. You come up with all the crazy plans. What do you got to add to this? And I looked at her and I'm like, I don't think we should do it. And Beth's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't think we should do it? And I'm like, you shouldn't ask me. You should ask Coyote. That's the name of my character. And she's like, okay, we're role playing. This is role playing. We're sitting around our war council. Sam is asking Coyote, you're the trickster. You've been alive for 1,000 years. What do we do? Well, and then
while that was happening, Dawn is preparing what they've done in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And Beth makes a comment, well, don't worry about it. We may not need it. I stop like, no, that prep work happened. Regardless of the decision that happens here, they've done their prep work. That has happened in this world that may end up being relevant, whether you go and do this face-off or not. As it turns out, it was very relevant whether, you know, when you guys didn't do the face-off.
And I guess to spin a little bit of advice into this at this point, if you ever find yourself in this situation where you've got to convince the party, so to speak, to do something major, to walk away from something major like this, what I did is I did not argue Beth down. In fact, I didn't disagree with her once other than the fact that to say I think we should walk away. What I did is I walked her to the truth, so to speak. It was like, who is our bad guy? Well, it's this person we're going after. Why are they our bad guy? Well, because these other demon things are influencing her and this, that, and the other. And I'm condensing down what we had talked about. And I'm like, okay, so these other demon things are influencing her. Would you say that they're pulling her strings? Well, yes. Well, then do you think that she's actually the bad guy? Yeah, we hate her. Yeah, we want to kill her. Totally on board with that. But what about these other guys? Like, oh, well, yeah, they're probably the bigger bad guy. Okay, what is their motive? Well, they're demons and they're this kind of demon and they want chaos and death and violence. And what are we going to do in this park? We're going to do a lot of chaos, death. And that's when it clicked for her. We're going to do a lot of chaos, death, and violence, which means we're doing their job for them. And it was in character. I love the fact that she made it in character. That's what made it work. Because I hadn't thought to do it in character. She made it in character, and I looked at her, I go, because she's this holy paladin, force of God with a sort of kickassery, I'm like, and she has questions about her job.
Yeah.
Her character doesn't 100% understand who she is or what she's supposed to be doing, and Coyote looked at her and goes, what's your job? To work for the demons or work for someone else? And she's like, well, it sure as hell ain't working for the demons.
So the
that's
biggest
where we got to it.
The biggest piece of advice I would give if someone were in the same place where they were thinking about doing this, in this case, it ended up not being necessary. But I would say that player before the game should grab the GM and let them know it's coming.
Absolutely.
And have that conversation with the GM. Is this going to completely destroy your gaming session? Even if it is and you're cool with it, now you've got some time to run with it and figure out what you're going to do.
Absolutely. And the reason I didn't do that with you is because I wasn't sure I was going to do it until Beth looked at me and said, okay, what's your plan? And I'm like, okay. And then I took a step over the cliff and I'm like, okay, here we go.
So I took a big lesson about myself out of this.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started GMing, a situation like that, I would have ended up like a deer in the headlights, where all of this prep work had gone in, all this planning had gone in, and not just me, everyone was planning for it. I would have been lost. I would have had to have taken a break. At this point, having GM'd for you for a while, Chad, I'm sitting there, and as the conversation comes up, it doesn't even faze me.
Yeah.
As I realized right away,
you were too cool for school, man. You were blasé about it.
I realized right away, okay, there's a good chance that isn't going to happen. You know what? My bad guys are characters with motivations.
Yes.
They know what they're going to do. They're going to continue to do what they were going to do because they don't know you're not going to show up. I was left at that point, a lot of things going through my mind about how am I going to work certain things. But that initial reaction of deer in the headlights didn't happen. Because I already thought, okay, how will the characters react to this? I'm going to figure that out as we go.
Yeah.
So, Wayne, I have a question for you along those lines. When something like this happens, when you have a situation where a player or the players throw a real curveball at you, where you really, they change the focus of it. And I think this is a good example, a good extreme example, because like you said, this is something that that everybody, except for Chad, was
2 weeks of planning out the window.
Planning
this was like
and working up to and
this
I mean
was
that's
like Star Wars.
And that is a very extreme example because oftentimes this kind of thing could happen just in within a regular session where you'll be doing something for half an hour or whatever and then you'll go sideways from it. But I mean this was something where, and again I agree with Wayne. I think most of the time it would be better to voice these opinions or voice that kind of thing well in advance while we were doing the planning and saying it's in, you know, instead of springing on them. But anyway, when it happens like this and you get a sudden change like this, but from a DM standpoint, I know that in and amongst all this, there is story and there is information sharing. There is information to be doled out to the characters within the story. How do you handle that? Because I'm sure I know because of what we did, we missed out on some information we have gotten. We probably got information we wouldn't have, but how do you handle that kind of thing?
That was the hardest part of Sunday. When this all happened, immediately my thoughts are, well, how would my bad guys react to this? And essentially I go back to the role player mentality. If I were a character, how would my character react to it? Same thing. How are the bad guys going to react to this? And all of that was going to be happening. And then I started going down the list in my head. What are the very important things that they have to learn in this session? Otherwise, next session, they're going to be wandering around lost. And there were a few key pieces of information I knew you guys had to get. So one of the things I tried to do was work it into what you were doing. So you guys were doing something different. Instead of going to the park to meet the bad guy, you were breaking into her apartment.
To gather information.
So, okay. I can, through the course of this apartment, feed them information that they would have found, but they would have gotten it more directly. They missed the villain monologuing.
This, I know, this is what hurt Wayne the most. You douchebag, Chad.
Yes.
You hurt Wayne to his ginger heart
by
not allowing him to give the Bondian
villain monologue. I know.
It was,
I kind of missed it, too. I'm like, oh, no!
It wasn't
a monologue.
It wasn't a big monologue, but I will say, the character in question, for anyone that knows the Dresden universe, is a white court vampire who had just gotten a coin of the Denarians. I had, on the way over, been practicing switching my voice from her human form to her demon form. Oh. And I did it with Beth on when Beth was on the phone with the character.
Like more of a heel now.
I got a chance to do a little bit of it on the phone.
Son of a bitch.
I was practicing my voice on the way over, and I was preparing that scene of the first transformation into her demon form. And it's like, well, hell, that's not going to happen now. That was the only thing I was disappointed about, really, was that I didn't get that.
I really wanted the monologue, too.
But at that point, it's like, okay, I have to get them this information some other way. I just started looking for opportunities. Looking at what you guys were doing. In one case, Dawn starts scrying. So it's like, okay, now I can let them know where one of the other characters was. They don't know what that character was doing. They would have found that out. But now they at least know where the person was. They can look into that if they choose. I needed you to know that the big the villain that you were supposed to fight in the park, I needed you to know that she had gotten that coin. So I found a way for her to reinteract. I actually gave multiple opportunities for you to find that out. One of them was the character flying back to the apartment. And when that didn't work, I just had her call Beth's cell phone. I'll be honest, that was a bit of a... taking the bat and going, here's the plot bat.
Yes, I admit that. That was
even
awesome,
though you did it, it was totally and completely in character
with
the way she had been, because like you had said, she was so focused and she was pissed off at Beth's character.
Oh yeah.
She was livid with Sam. So for her to have done that was not, I didn't even consider that this was plot wagon bearing down on us, because it was completely in character. And like I want to say, I think Chad will agree with me here. Kudos to you, Wayne. Absolutely. I think you did a fantastic job. And like you said, you have grown so much as a GM over the last year or two. And to be able to think on your feet like that is incredible.
It was actually funny throughout the night. Every single player around the table at some point approached me and said, I'm sorry, did we just really screw up your game? And I was like, no. I'm cool with this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No combat that I have planned is ever necessary in any game. Mm-hmm. No social interaction that I have planned is ever necessary in any game. I will never be able to predict what every player at the table does. And I know Chad's at my table, so something crazy can happen.
You've got the trial by fire, because really Chad is an extreme case of this. I think most people aren't going to have the Chad effect in their game. But it's good, because it's one of those things where what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger.
I like plans. I like crazy plans.
And
I don't think I do stunts, like crazy stunts, but I definitely...
You'd like to change things up.
Yes, I do.
From an advice standpoint, because you mentioned this earlier, Chad. I'm sorry, you were waiting.
One other thing I did that I also will give out as advice that I don't think anyone caught on to. I got you guys talking to each other to give me a moment to go through in my head and figure out, okay,
absolutely,
how am I going to get you the information?
Yep.
I got you guys role-playing with NPCs and with each other, in some cases as a stalling tactic to figure out, okay, now I just need a second to think about how my NPCs are going to react to what just happened.
And that's along what I was going to say. From an advice standpoint, that's good. But also, as a GM, if you need to just take a few minutes when something like this happens to sort things out and to rethink things, do it. Don't hesitate. Just say, guys, you know what? Hey, this is awesome. I know we've said this before on the mics. I'm just reiterating it.
Yeah.
Say, guys, this is great. Not a problem. I just need about 10 minutes to recollect my thoughts, because obviously we were going to be doing something else. Let's take a 10-minute break and we'll reconvene and do that. Do not put yourself behind the eight ball as GM unless it's something you really get off on. If you need the time, take it to regroup and collect your thoughts.
Absolutely.
It's not a problem. Like I said, it's a game.
I do it all the time.
When I first started,
do it all the time as a player with Chad, because I'll have something in mind to do, and then Chad comes along.
And just so, oops all over it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I will say as a GM, when I first started GMing, something like that would have been a very stressful situation. I would have been scrambling to figure out what I was going to do. And while there was scrambling, it was never stressful. I've really learned to enjoy the curveballs at this point. Maybe it's a little bit of
good.
Well,
I'm not leaving the group.
Like I said, it's good in the fact that it's a good teaching tool. Yeah.
Did you just call me a teaching tool?
Yes, you are definitely a tool, and there's some teaching that can come from it. But these are the kinds of things that you're going to encounter. So when you encounter stuff like this, it's you do nothing but learn.
One of the things though that really threw me most in the session while there's going to be a lot of advice on this episode, really is coming down to one big gaming story. Mm-hmm. Back to the Chad factor. Chad has multiple characters in this campaign.
Yes, I do.
This is Arc 2.
It's the first time I've run two characters in the same game at the same time.
Well, and typically it hasn't come up in this section. This is Arc 2. You played one character in Arc 1. You played a different character in Arc 2. In this case, because they knew the big fight was coming, they called out the character from Arc 1,
Because
which is a powerhouse.
Yeah, the character in Arc 2, like I said, is a coyote. He's a trickster spirit. He has no combat abilities whatsoever. He has his fairy glamours. That's it. He does, and he hides. He can hide in shadows and fairy glamour. He hides and lies. That's all he does is he hides and lies.
Now, the character from Arc 1 is a big giant monster that has some really good hot buttons to him.
Yes. He's a bridge troll.
Now, I planned going in, I had 2 weeks to plan for this. Mm-hmm. I knew how the bad guys were going to deal with that character. I had things set up to even it out.
Yeah.
So that character would
guys
dominate.
With shotguns, and the shotguns had iron bullets because he's vulnerable. He's a troll. He's a fairy. Yeah. He has none of his powers work when there's iron around.
Mental powers when he has no real mental saves. And
none. He's like Superman, and his kryptonite is iron. Magic and psychic attacks destroy him, and iron is his kryptonite.
Yep. So going
but
in,
he is invincible and can rip a car in half.
So going in, I knew how I was dealing with the character in the park. You guys ended up having the combat with that character, but you had the combat in her apartment instead.
Yeah.
So all of these things that were in place to deal with the monster that they had brought out, none of those were going to be in place in the apartment. And that was something I know I really struggled with, that combat. I wanted to make sure everyone had a chance to do something interesting.
I played in the last...
You're a min-maxed monster.
It was a totally min-maxed monster where I took multiple powers that synergized to become greater than their component pieces. And I don't know what happened with this. I just... There's something clicked and I'm like, oh my God, I want to play a bridge troll and I can make a murder machine.
Well, and that's true, because I just realized it because I've killed this more people. Chad. Chad literally did min-max his character. Yeah. Chad has rolls for his physical attack that start at a +8, I think.
I go...
That's before you
roll
no
the
dice.
Charts.
Yeah. That goes beyond the chart. I think the chart goes... goes... Yeah, whatever. That's like an epic success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even,
I go beyond epic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... And that's unlike
and I've
you,
also
Chad,
killed,
to be such a min-maxer.
And I've also killed...
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I've also killed more people and monsters in this game than anybody else in the game combined.
Mm-hmm. So as this combat starts, I know from a story standpoint, I make the decision right away, I want Beth to get the final blow.
Absolutely.
Because Beth's character and this character hate each other. From a story standpoint, they are... two sides of the coin against each other for the...
Ah, it's a Denarian, huh? I get the pun.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a nerd.
Oh, my God.
So, from a story standpoint, this is the first time I've ever gotten to the combat. I'm like, I really want the mechanical combat to end in a certain way.
Yeah.
I've never had that happen before in any game that I've ever run. And it's like, okay, how am I going to do this fair? Mm-hmm. Because I'm very... That's one other thing. When I run, I am always fair with the numbers. My characters that you're fighting are things that I have built with the rules, even though I don't have to. The things that you're fighting, they have set numbers and they will abide by them. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing is once we got to that point, the character was almost down. Beth is up. She's not going to make the roll to do it. I start pointing out things about the game system.
It's like, and now I like the way you did it because the way you sort of set this up in the first place had the hairs on the back of my neck standing up because I've encountered this before where a GM, they've decided beforehand, oh, I know who's going to kill the bad guy and it's not going to be you, Pat.
Yep.
F*** you.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Not
but
that you're exactly.
What happened,
and in
like
all
what
fairness,
saying,
if you would have killed her, I would have rolled with it.
Right.
I wanted it to end that way and I was going to try to help it in that way.
Yes.
But I limit myself to the numbers. If Chad one-shotted her, she was dead. If you got the killing blow, she was gone. But I wanted Beth to get that from
the
story.
And I like how you did, just to further explain what you'd already started to say, it was Beth's turn. Beth had made her roll, and she literally had missed it by one die.
And so the game had a mechanic we could use for this.
Yes, and it does. Yeah, and it's got the aspects that have been, you can tag aspects. or other people can help. So Wayne just, it was Don and myself. We were the ones that hadn't gone yet. Because Chad had gone. It was,
you all had like, the exact same initiative.
Pat and Don, what was it that you guys were going to be doing? Because you're doing it, you're sort of going at the same time. Because what you're doing may end up tagging an aspect and helping Beth make this role. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. I forget which one of us it
character
was.
Character was bloodied and had a broken leg.
Yeah, but
and,
somebody did something of the two of us that allowed Beth to get a plus one on her role and allowed it to happen. And I like that. I think that that was fantastic. So those are the good things. But even as awesome as that was, I say be careful as a GM in doing that kind of thing.
And so it like went saying, against everything I have ever done as a GM.
Because I've seen the favoritism.
Yeah,
they and want a certain player to this, or they've got their Mary Sue NPC, or their Baron Von Badass that just cannot be taken down by the player characters, no matter what. And it just drives me.
That's
insane.
Like I was saying, it was. It actually, I thought about that a lot after the game. That was something I have never done as a GM. I've never gone into the fight thinking I would like it to end like this. But again, it didn't bother me because I did play fair with everyone. If someone else got the killing blow, they would have got the killing blow. It just worked out that I was able to help her get that blow that has the most impact on the story overall.
Yeah. Now, talking about the story, this brings up another interesting aspect of what we have done with this story. And this is something I want to talk about because I think it's a cool concept that we've sort of hit on. And, it's worth mentioning. And that is the story arc concept. Yeah. Chad had mentioned and Wayne had mentioned earlier, we're actually in the second arc of this campaign. First arc that we did before centered more around my character. Yep. And then the second arc is centering around Beth's character. And the interesting thing about that is the group dynamic. The group dynamic has changed in the arcs. And what is happening is whoever is sort of the center point of the story arc kind of becomes the leader of the group in a way.
Because they're most impacted by the events that are happening around them. When I decided I was doing that, when I decided I was going to do the story arc, I didn't know that this would happen. I never expected, you know, your character to be the leader in the first arc and Beth to be the leader in the second. It was a very happy side effect that came out of it. And I think one of the dangers of story arcs that I don't think we've fallen into at all is if you put the spotlight on a character for too long, the other characters may feel left out. From talking to everyone, I don't think we've had that problem because every single character gets progression. Every character gets buy into the story. Every character's story has progressed, but the plot, the bad guy, is focused on one of you.
I really like this concept because oftentimes what you're going to run into in your typical role-playing group, the people, they've got their sort of their set character. Yeah. He's the
you know, he was a troll, and that wasn't enough. So then he made a trickster.
Trickster.
I was a troll that was a troll who did trolling, and then I'm playing a lion.
And that wasn't enough, so he had to do both of them in one gaming session.
Exactly.
A troll and a trickster.
Guys wanted me to bring in Ward because he's a murder face bastard.
That's true.
And then you've got Wayne, who's the bard, and then there's me. But what I like, though, is that you sort of have that sort of setup where from the campaign starts to the end, everybody sort of has their de facto role. Mm-hmm. There is somebody who's going to probably be the leader, and it's going to be Joe because he's the leader all the time and everybody else is whatever.
Yeah.
But this is nice because it's sort of it doesn't force it, but it kind of it in shifting that spotlight, it allows those roles to change a little bit.
Yep.
And that's a great way because I think that's great in role playing because often when things are so set in their ways, you just don't ever get that change
or you
try to force people to change and you get into a rut. This is a great idea to try to come up with and to try to play with and see if it will work for your group because you can shift that around. And I think that's just a really healthy thing to do.
Group. I also like throwing different bad guys at the players. So a character that may be the powerhouse that when it comes to combat, he is the battler. I throw something at him that's his weak spot, but this other character doesn't fight much. Going back to the very first arc, there was something that you guys fought that was ridiculously physically powerful, and he had a big weakness to John's character. So you have Chad's character who goes into these combats fighting things, and he's just dominating. We get to that fight, Chad's not able to do much to this guy. Yeah. You weren't able to even hit him.
No, not at all.
And John is the one that suddenly gets to be the combat master and takes the guy out because he's weak to his powers.
Mm-hmm.
I like doing that, too. I like flipping that up. So it's one of the big things. It may come from the fact that I enjoy playing bards. I enjoy playing the character that is not the combat master ever and that has a lot of utility. So that makes me look at the party, and it makes me think, I want every character to have a moment.
Looks great in leggings and a poofy shirt.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I look at the party, and I think about that, and it's like, I want everybody to have a chance to shine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that every GM needs to do. You need to,
absolutely.
I mean, that's,
you've got to consider that. Yeah.
Right, I mean,
you put the spotlight on individual players, you know, and then on the party as a whole.
Setting up this story, you've got to be really aware of your players and think about them and try to give everybody a little bit of the cookie, you know.
And then the players too, good experienced veteran players, especially ones who've been in the GM's seat, help put the spotlight on other players. They take a part of their spotlight and they give it up and they put on another player too. I mean, that's kind of like way earlier in the episode, I was talking about, you know, it's like, okay, I don't think we should do this plan, but you need to ask Coyote. And then Beth took it in character. As we've said, I'm a very type A personality. I have a very strong personality, and I didn't force Beth to go with my idea or my plan. I didn't argue her down or I didn't dominate her. I wanted her to choose because it was her conflict. It was her story and it was her moment. And I just saw a glaring flaw in it. All I wanted to do was make her see the flaw, and then she makes the decision and she comes to that, or she doesn't. And we go forward with it.
I have to say, going into that gaming session, I was expecting epic combat, and I got a panty raid.
Yes.
I could not have ever seen that coming, and not a million years.
While the bad girl guy, the protagonist, Pat is a shitting grin on his face.
Yep.
While the bad guys were coming to the park to kill us, and we said, screw that, we're going to go break into the bad guy's apartment because we need to find out more of what's going on so that we could work a really good, crazy plan. And we broke into their apartment. Well, we needed to scry, because in Dresden, scrying's a big thing, and you need a personal object. Well, what's more personal than dirty panties?
Well, and that's not the funny thing about that, though, is that when we went in to search the apartment, Wayne he said, this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
And I finally made a roll. These fate dice hate me. The fate dice are really evil because I rarely ever get any. If I get a plus one, you know, if I get one plus, you know, net plus one, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Usually it's either zero or negative. But I actually got, I believe,
whereas I'm rolling four pluses on plus nine.
Yeah, exactly. So. I actually, on my investigation, which is my highest stat at a plus five, I believe I rolled a plus three. So I got a plus eight on my search roll, which was legendary or epic. It's off the chart. So I was actually able to find things. And what did I find? I found the bad demon's dirty panties that she had
now,
literally.
I want to point out, I never used the word panties or said underwear. It wasn't even Dawn that said, is there underwear in there?
Yes. Yes, Ed Dawn was asking for the dirty panties.
Yes, yes, she was. Because she even knows, she's even like, hey, I know what my dirty underwear are like. So.
Oh, I love it. That's so funny.
Yes.
And that was probably the moment in game when most I just need to pause. When she said that comment of, I know what my dirty underwear is like, I had this moment of, I don't know what to say now.
Yeah. And we scryed off of dirty panties.
Yes, we
did. It was great. It was great.
And we scryed and we scryed over and over. One thing that you mentioned early on, Wayne, that I wanted to sort of go back to because I think it's important, and all of this that has happened, is you asked Chad about the fact of GM trust.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that is an important thing, too, because in all this situation that, as we described it, you know, you guys at home can be saying, oh, well, of course it was a trap, and my God, you guys were stupid to think to go into it in the first place. But that's the thing.
Absolutely.
We were going that way. And there was the trust there of, this seems to be the way the plot's going. And Wayne is not saying, well, yeah, you guys can do this. He's not giving us any subtle hints like, well, yeah, you could do that if you want to die horribly.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, this is going to be tough. It's going to be an epic battle. Yeah. But again,
and I gave you guys a chance, too, ahead of time to prep the battlefield.
Absolutely.
Right.
I knew what
we were stacking the deck.
I knew what I was stacking the deck with, but I gave you guys every opportunity to do that too. I think you as players, not as characters, you as players knew going in that it would have been a fair fight.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And even if it...
I did not have any problem at the beginning of the session going the way we were going. And I was actually kind of surprised whenever you and Beth started your sidebar and, and you were pulling her away from him. I'm like, what the hell, you know? Because I'm like, yeah.
What the hell? You're all over Wade's game.
This is going to be a tough... this is going to be a tough combat, but, you know, we'll get through because, again, we trust Wayne. He's not out to... us like some people can be.
I actually had the conversation as I got up to go to gaming. I'm like, well, time to go beat up my players. And Sarah's like, don't kill anybody. I'm like, well, Chad's got two characters and one of them is from the first arc. Can I kill his first character? And she's like, yeah, that's acceptable.
See?
My first character. He's so sad. He's got everything going against him.
He does. He is a sad panda.
You know, the funny thing about my character is that, he's an amazing powerhouse. He's got all this. He's an absolute murder machine. You know what his one weakness is? It's not cold iron. It's girls. For the past three games, because Ward has slowly been coming up and kind of working his way into the game off and on. Ward is the name of my first character. He's the name of the bridge troll. And he is a human form. And he switches back and forth. And he usually stays in his human form. And Beth is friends with Ward from the first game. And Beth loves Ward. Beth is like the group mom. And she really, really feels sorry for Ward because Ward has a lot of terrible things going on in his life. At the end of the last game, Ward kind of gave up. He fell into a deep depression and he really just gave up on everything, on himself mainly. Beth's character, Sam, was really worried about him. Well, Dawn starts playing with us, and Dawn makes this character of this Wiccan. And she's part of a coven in this area of St. Louis, and she's a young woman and all this sort of stuff. And I make a throwaway comment. Like, Dawn's character goes away, Ward comes into the group, and I make a throwaway comment of, hey, where'd the cute chick go? Kind of flirting with Dawn more than anything else. And then Beth springs on it. She's like, oh my God, I got to be the group Yinta. I've got to get these two hooked up. And so she's been trying to like put us in the same room, sit next to each other when we go on a car ride, trying to get us to date, to go out with, to get our characters to go out with each other. And it's kind of like not really been happening and whatever. I find it amusing more than anything else. But I've been kind of playing Ward because he's in dumps and he has all this bad stuff going on for him. No confidence whatsoever. He can't ask her out. He gets embarrassed. He can't even look at her. His face. I mean, we're talking guy who's a troll, right? Not just as a troll, but in real life, he's a troll. He's sarcastic. He likes making fun of. If he's making fun of you, it means he likes you. If he's not making fun of you, that means he doesn't like you. He's constantly trolling people and stuff, and he's very self-confident and such like that, except on the inside. He can't even look at her. He blushes when she's around, and he can't talk to her. And so we do this big fight in the apartment where Ward helps kill this thing, this monster. It's this epic fight, and all these people are involved in all this stuff, and Ward is in his face, or in the demon's face, and Ward takes a big blast of damage and comes right fighting on back and kills it, and as soon as it's dead, he walks into the bathroom and he takes a shower. And he walks out in a towel and looks right at Dawn's character, Tara, and say, hey, you want to go out on a date? And she's like, sure. And he's like, that is the real victory!
And I would say, barring that, I was going to advise, I heard that if that hadn't worked, that Naked Spin the Bottle works really well.
Yes.
That actually points out something that I'd like to mention. I've talked about in previous podcasts how romance is something that never happens in game. And now I realize why. We didn't have any females in the group.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true, though. Well, that's the thing. I
know that there is romance in other games where there are no females, but... Yeah. It may have been nobody wanted to flirt with Dan.
I flirted with Dan. Bitch.
True. No one wanted to flirt with him in character.
I flirted with him in character.
And out of character. And but you didn't, out of game.
No,
and,
I was going to say,
it was you after your best
generally
started,
speaking, mostly,
you're a flirt.
Generally speaking, you're probably right. But I've never had that problem. I have always pursued romantic relationships in the role-playing games. And it's almost always it is with the GM, which is a male.
Well, it was
I just don't, you know, for me, it's not a problem because I'm flirting with the female NPC.
It was something I had not seen in game until Beth joined the group. And it wasn't Beth that you were flirting with.
No, I generally don't speak. I generally don't flirt with my own wife.
I don't do
at the gaming table. I flirt with my wife all the time.
I don't,
just not in gaming.
And everyone else too.
Yes,
but I don't. Ever since Beth joined, and now Dawn, every game has romance in it.
I don't,
which I like. I like a lot.
Mm-hmm. I don't do romance. In fact, I've never done romance in a game. This is actually the first time I've barely touched on the concept of romance. And even then, we haven't actually, I just asked her out, right? And he's and Ward's all like, oh my God, I just asked her out. And he doesn't even have any money and he can't actually take her out. So there's a lot of stuff going against that. This might not work out. But I've gamed with Dawn multiple times in the past and we've never romanced in game before. So,
well, I'm glad to see you're doing it because for me, it's always something that it always adds to the game to me. It's something that I do because that's part of life. I'm a flirt. I am. So I will do that there too. So
Beth is a Yinta. Her powers are irresistible.
That's true.
Don't mess with her. If you need an in-game date, play with Beth.
Yes, well, she tries to thwart mine all the time. It's so funny. Yes. It's so funny. I God bless Beth.
Outrageously so jealous.
Beth flirts with everything around the table. She's flirting with everybody. And
but John has had something with her. My characters have had something with her.
But and she gets all onto me because in this game, my paramour, my love interest is actually my benefactor. And there's a very good reason for it. I've explained it because...
Who's an NPC?
Okay, we'll go into a little bit of a game story. I'm an emissary of power in the Dresden universe. And basically, part of my deal is that I'm essentially immortal. I mean, in that I can be killed, but...
As long as nobody drops a piano on
as
you.
As long as I don't get hit with a piano, I will technically live forever. So it's kind of a Highlander thing. I will live as long as nobody, you know, just really kills me. And so I try to stay alive. Well, because of that... I'm playing up the thing of, you know, I'm playing a guy that's like 300 years old, but looks like a 25-year-old. I have outlived everyone that I ever cared for. You know, back when I first got this, my family, which is sort of cursed, and I say it in quotes, as being working for this emissary, I've watched the rest of my family grow old and die around me. All the people that I've loved throughout the years, you know, my girlfriends, wives, lovers, whatever, I watched them get old and die. It made me emotionally distant, and I play that up. And the fact that I don't have interest in mortals, in the mundanes, in the mortals, because they're
one
just
of your characters'
going to leave
aspects
me.
Actually is emotionally distant, followed by the aspect I've got a soft spot.
Right.
Nice.
So it's hard for me because I do have the soft spot for people, but at the same time, I know I love Beth's character Sam, but she's going to grow old and die. Just like everybody else, she's going to leave me just like everybody else.
And because Sam's mother is trying to hook you and Sam up. And we'll
but,
anything else, but
I have established now this relationship with my benefactor, who is a god. She's basically an Indian goddess, a Native American goddess. And she, you know, will come to me. When we interact, she comes as... And I love the way Wayne has set that up. She will interact. She will come to me and... my idealized form of a woman. She knows what I find attractive, and that's what she's always showing up as. And I like that, and I have taken to her because I had an epiphany, and that epiphany is I finally found somebody that's not going to grow old and die on me. Mm-hmm. I can have a relationship with this person. This is great for my character, and I love it. Beth hates it. She hates this person.
Not Sam. Beth hates it, which rolls downhill her character, Sam.
She hates this person. She's like, well, she gets so funny how jealous she gets of my girlfriend. So, but
who is Wayne?
Exactly. So it's just kind of funny the way it all works out.
You know, I'm just imagining the people listening to this that have read the Dresden books.
Yeah.
All of these minor things that have been said throughout all mean a lot to people that know the setting. I just know what's going through their head. What kind of power levels are these people dealing with? Because to be honest, when we were making characters, we were looking at it, and it's like, I thought about going for a low power level, but it's like, you know what? Let's go about the top that the book gives us.
Yeah.
And part of that was, you know, the types of characters people wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and when we got to Beth, we realized that she was the perfect character for what she wanted to do was a Knight of the Cross. Well, at that point, we're up in the power level for everyone.
You know what, though? I don't have a problem with that because here's the thing. I love the Dresden universe that we've played it, but I don't see that I'm going to go out and play it with another group because this is my group. So for me, this is my one shot at playing Dresden, you know, and I want to experience Dresden. I don't like playing low power anyway, but I don't see a problem with playing on the higher end of it because then you get to experience sort of the full range of what the Dresden verse is. You see all these big things like that. And even though we are so powerful, we still have problems all, you know, along the way. We are not some invincible group of characters.
Like I said, the big murder face.
We're still stumbling through what we're doing and stumbling into success.
The big murder face troll, his greatest weakness is love.
Exactly.
You know, and Coyote's is that he's exiled from his home and he can never actually be with the people that he's around.
Well, that and Coyote has a weakness to any combat role.
Awesome. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for us. Thanks for sticking with us through our foodie stories and our gaming stories. Yeah. You guys,
this is a game story heavy episode.
It was. Yeah. I think people are going to like it.
I think some people are going to barf all over their iPods.
I
do too.
Yeah. I think they really will. Yeah. All right, well, you guys have a good week, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.